you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 195 of The Law Entrepreneur, our first episode of the year 2000. My name is Neil Tyra. I'm your host once again. And today, my guest is Brett Tremblay. Now, Brett owns a law firm in Florida that he's grown from a solo practice to what I would call mid-sized firm, maybe even a large firm, if you want to think about it, but in the neighborhood of 25 people, attorneys and staffers alike. So he is a very successful attorney in his own right, but he's also the owner and creator of a company called Get Staffed Up, which is a, for lack of a better word, a virtual assistant staffing company. The difference here is that the staffers are all overseas based. And so there's an economy realized as a result of using offshore support. And it's a really fascinating discussion about how you might want to incorporate those resources into the growth of your law firm, freeing you up to do more things to attract more clients and continue to achieve growth and hire more attorneys and with their own offshore staffing support, if that's the model that you want to follow. So it's a fascinating discussion. I'm really delighted to get to know Brett, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did having it. So without any further delay, here is Brett Tremblay. Brett Tremblay, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. I'm really happy to be here today.
Well, I'm excited that you could take time out of your day to join us, Brett. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
I would love to, Neil, and the worry of not talking too much about myself. I'm going to tell you why I'm here today and how this all fits in. But it's an interesting thing that I've been doing for the past 2 years in helping the legal community. So I am a lawyer. I've been practicing now almost 11 years. And I've had my own law firm for just over 8 years. And I'm in Miami, Florida. We do business and franchise law. As I like to say, we protect the economy one business at a time. So we represent employers, entrepreneurs, and business owners. And with a small business economy that's thriving, we feel like the economy is good for everyone. And that's really our niche and where we fit in. And we love working with business owners and entrepreneurs. And 8 years ago, when I started the firm, for the first 2 years, it was just me. And when I say just me, I had shared office space, and there was a shared receptionist who would pick up the phone and either transfer it over or hang up. I mean, there was no help whatsoever. So this was back in 2011. And I remember spending a few hours trying to figure out how to send faxes myself on the fax machine, which they're all a little bit different. And so fast forward to almost 2020, and we have 10 attorneys and almost 25 total staff members at the law firm.
That's pretty fast, explosive growth.
Yeah, it really is. It's been a fun ride, and I find myself in a position where I'm not practicing law. I haven't for about 3 years now. I'm running a business, which is the law firm, and it is, you know, I get to focus on the mission and doing what I can to help change the world for our clients and who we want to work with. So it's pretty, it's an ideal situation that I have worked really hard to put myself in.
So that kind of growth for a law firm has its own issues, and it's, you know, its own challenges. But let's kind of go to the core of it a little bit. What do you think was responsible, or primarily responsible, for the growth in your firm? Was it the economy presenting more opportunities that you were able to take advantage of, or was it some particular marketing strategy that you really locked into place and exploited, or combination of all of the above?
Well, I don't want to be naive and say that a booming economy hasn't just coincided with good timing. I think anyone that takes 100% credit for their own success is missing a few factors. And so there's been a lot of fortunate things that have happened along the way, of course. However, Tony Robbins has a quote. He says, 80% of the hang up in any business is the mindset of the owner or the leader. And I specifically remember being on the beach in the Bahamas with my wife, and we have three kids now. Then our 2-year-old girl, which was our first, in about 2013. And I'm sending all the content for a new website I was creating that the recreational marijuana law was about to get voted on in Florida. And I had a domain, and I was going to start doing that. And I'm like, I can't even get myself out of my own way to run a successful, you know, business and litigation firm. And here I am trying to do something new. It's like the cat always chasing, you know, the next bouncing ball that comes along, mentally distracting myself from the fact that I don't have a lot of business, and I'm you know, pretending like, well, I'm an entrepreneur and I'll just do this new thing that comes along. And I was just sitting there, and it's this moment. And by the way, this was a free paid for trip, or else I wouldn't have been able to even, you know, take the short trip from Miami to the Bahamas, because as we all know, when you're on your own and you start a business, you don't know when your next paycheck is going to come from. So I just had to finally reflect back on myself and say, I'm not doing what I need to do to make this business happen. And I need to stop making excuses, and I need to get some help. And you'll see on this podcast, the title has nothing to do with my law firm. It's about Get Staffed Up, which is an offshore staffing company that, along with my business partner, it was actually his idea to start this business. But we do offshore staffing for law firms. And it just ties in so well with my story. And what I like to tell young lawyers and entrepreneurs is there, and the more, like I said, I have 25 people, and I used to think there were 7 to 10 hats that you could wear in a business. Well, there's more like 50. And I still wear several hats. And when you're trying to do everything yourself, you just get crushed. And it's just so difficult to run a business when you're trying to be your own bookkeeper, your own accountant, your own marketer, your own salesperson, your own lawyer, you know, or your own chef in your own restaurant. And that's what I was trying to do. And it was a recipe for disaster.
Well, I see kind of a, not necessarily a conflict, but, you know, a question here. So you have this epiphany on the beach that chasing this shiny object of, you know, associated with the new marijuana laws in Florida was not conducive to growing your practice, and yet you now stand at a place where you have a practice and a second business servicing other attorneys. So it seems like, you know, you jump from one fire to a different frying pan.
Yeah, so that's a good point. This happened in 2013. I had the epiphany. So what I did is I finally made the decision to get some help. And I had a friend of a friend come along. She was in law school, and I hired her for about 30 hours a week. And I immediately doubled the revenue of my firm. And I will give myself credit for this, because some people, you know, stumble upon success, but then they chalk it up to maybe a one-time thing or luck. But I said, well, wow, if all I had to do was hire someone and I double my firm, let's keep this going. So she went back to work in, like I said, this is the summer of actually 2014. She went back to law school, and I hired a 30-hour-a-week, you know, paralegal. And same thing. I just kept growing the firm, and I finally said, all right, let's repeat this success. I took some of the money that I made from doubling the revenues into more marketing. And then I hired an intake person and a receptionist. And so I didn't start the new business, Neil, until 2018.
Okay.
You know, five years later, after having a multi-million dollar law firm, where now I could afford to have the freedom to start tackling some other projects.
Well, it's really an interesting concept here. And I think it's the threshold question that so many solo practitioners have is, when is the right time to make that decision to bring on some additional help, whether it be part-time or full-time or virtual or what have you? When's the optimal time? Because I will tell you, the scenario that most people, I think, find themselves in is feeling like, okay, I have to build my practice up. Right now it's a one-man shop. I have to build my practice up until I have enough revenue that I can afford to hire that person comfortably. And so what that means is I have to work myself to death 80-hour weeks in order to generate that kind of revenue. And now, by necessity, because if I don't hire somebody now, I'm going to fall over dead from a heart attack. So I hire somebody, and then even that creates a workload, because how do I delegate work to them? How do I train them while continuing to keep these plates spinning in the air? So how did you address that question, or did you just leap off the end of that gangplank or off the end of that cliff and figure it out on the way down?
That's really the million-dollar question. And I know that sounds kind of like a throwaway line, but I'm quite serious about that. The struggle that I had that was so fierce within my own head and really within my own stomach, because when you're that stressed and you can't figure out how to get out of your own way, and you have these thoughts of, you know, do I shut down my business? Do I go to work at a law firm? Can I do this? Are so real to each person that when I say it now, my friends or people hear me and they say, oh, well, you know, it's different and you different type of, and it's always an excuse, because it's an unconscious really reason that you make up in your head because you haven't been there before. And I was that person. So I'm not saying that to condemn anyone, because I know a lot of people say it's so simple and make these decisions, but it's really, really hard. I spent 2 years agonizingly wondering why I couldn't grow my business.
And let's also not forget that you had a wife and what, two kids at the time?
Well, one kid, and then the second one came along in 2015.
So yeah,
thankfully,
so,
you know.
So you had those pressures as well. You talk about making your stomach hurt.
Right. And I really insulated my family to the detriment of my own health, you know, from the financial pressures. But again, it goes back to exactly what you said, Neil, which is I thought I needed to build up my bank account to have, I don't know, let's say $20,000 to say, well, now I have the money to hire someone.
Right.
But that's what most of us think, because it's quite logical. You have to have money before you can spend money, but you will never actually make that money unless you hire someone. So you have to go in the reverse direction, because the average lawyer bills, the average solo attorney that doesn't have any help bills 0.9 hours per day. 0.9 hours. And so you think about it, most of us can charge at least $300 an hour. So you're basically making $300 a day. If you just build 2 or 3 hours a day, you know, you double and triple your business. So it sounds easy, but with the amount of emails and phone calls and inquiries and sales conversations and networking and building your website, and it starts to make your head spin, you just don't have enough time, and you never will, or that statistic would be much higher. And so you have to just make the decision to hire someone from day one. And so to answer your question, when is the right time? I tell people like this: if you're going to open a restaurant, you shouldn't be your own chef. You should go hire the best chef possible and decide, with every dollar that comes in your restaurant, X percentage is going to food, X percentage is going to the chef, and I'm going to go and make this happen. And that's the way I look at building a business now.
Yeah, it's kind of counterintuitive from the lawyer's viewpoint, But from any other business, and just as you said, you make reference to the restaurant business, which I was in for many years, it's the standard operating procedure. That's exactly how one does it, even if you're talking about a small little grill working on, you know, in a corner establishment. You have people who work in the business while you work on the business. And I always find it interesting. And look, I'm guilty as anybody of having that, you know, opposite viewpoint, that counterintuitive viewpoint that I got to make enough money that I can afford to hire somebody.
Yep. I mean, it's such a hard lesson to learn. And I try to beat people over the head with it, but not in a way where I come at it from you're doing this wrong because you don't know any better. I'm saying I was you. I live that life. Let me help you learn from my mistakes. And it's hard to convey that I really am not doing it from a judgmental standpoint. But you're just never going to grow unless you hire help. It's just the way it works.
Yeah, and it's always that inflection point that, you know, when does that make sense to start that process? Because clearly you're not going to be a multi-million-dollar firm all by yourself. Unless your fees are really pretty high. So intuitively, you know that you're going to have to add staff to get to that level if that's what you aspire to. It's getting started that's so difficult for so many people. Now, when you had this epiphany and you brought staff members on starting at 30 hours a week, was there any magic to where you picked that number or how you found the staffing to satisfy that need, or were you just kind of experimenting along the way?
Yeah, I was experimenting, and the only reason it was 30 hours is because the girl that I hired was still finishing her paralegal certificate, so she couldn't work more, or I would have hired her full time. And
let's see here. Now, right there, there's another difference in your mindset than from most people. So your view, your mindset at the time was you could only hire her for 30 hours because she was still finishing her paralegal. You would have hired her for more. Whereas I think a lot of people think, well, you know, maybe I can hire somebody for 10 hours a week.
And a lot of people do that. And there are positions, there's a lot of maybe, you know, part-time, fractional, personal assistance that we know that people use that they can add value and they can add benefit. But you're not going to create the type of momentum in your business when you have things stacked up for 30 hours a week, just waiting for that really part-time person to come in and you unload on them. It's way more work than they can get done. But you're saying, well, but I can't pay them otherwise. I can't pay them more than that. And with the amount of time they'll free up for you, you can more than pay for them, because it goes back to the if I'm answering phones, I can't make more than $10 an hour because that's what that pays for. And people scoff at that lesson, but it's absolutely true, because you cannot charge for that time for more than it's worth. And you're going to end up doing about, in my experience, Neil, about 30 hours a week of administrative time. So what we've done with Get Staffed Up is, like I mentioned before, we're an offshore staffing company for lawyers and law firms. Is we meet with people experiencing these pain points, and we talk them through the fact that I wish I had known about this, Neil, but there's a lot of really talented people that can help your firm. They just happen to be born in another country. And if you are, you know, really struggling to bring that help on, because of the price point, and you think, how am I going to afford that? We have a solution for you, a full-time, extremely high-quality, vetted assistant for you, administrative assistant. We have different types of assistants, but in terms of potentially who our audience is, that will work for you full-time, well, for less than minimum wage is what it turns out to be. You pay us, so you're not the employer. You're not worried about all the liability, the withholding, you know, the payroll issues, and we pay this person. So they're our employee, but they do work for you full time and only for you. And you're off and running with some really affordable, great help And the next step is training. And that's a whole another conversation perhaps we get into. But it's really the reason I harp on it so much is it goes back to the mindset and the decision of, you know, if someone else started their firm, I know a lot of people that started the firm same time I did with the same economy, and they haven't been able to grow as fast as we can. Now, that may not have been their goal, and that's fine. But it's more than you know, a good economy, Neil. It's making the constant decision to reinvest and to grow and to learning how to do that and become the person that focuses on growth than on management and practicing. Because growing a firm and running a firm are two totally different things.
Well, let's talk about, you know, the company gets staffed up and kind of the difference between, you know, internal staffing and external staffing. So I would characterize this as adding to your staffing through external resources if you were to use a company such as Get Staffed Up. Now, is there a transition where you start to use, you know, somebody like Get Staffed Up to get started to add to your workforce, but then that creates enough revenue and frees up enough time that you can then bring on an internal staffing addition, such as, you know, you say you're up to now 25 folks in the office. I don't assume that all of them are offshore virtual employees.
No. So my the Tremblay Law Firm, we only have one virtual employee right now. So when I say the 25, I actually, yep, that's one of the 25. I haven't, just on the momentum, et cetera, we have not ourselves really layered in the offshore staff that I would like to. But each firm has its own needs and its own internal versus external staffing conundrums to figure out. And this is not a one size fits all,
right,
which is what you just said. It's like, well, how do I know when to go internal, when to go external? And you hit the nail on the head when you said, does that create enough revenue to then hire someone in-house? Well, I'm a huge advocate of having, especially a few people in-house that really run you and take care of your, you know, a lot of your personal items and help you. And when you can layer that in with giving your own people their maybe offshore executive assistants or your attorneys in your firm their own personal offshore executive assistant, it can just be a huge boon to productivity without every time saying, well, you know, depending on where you are in the US, and now I got to add $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to payroll every time I need a little bit of help. And that's really what we're solving, because our price points are anywhere from $1,450 to about $1,850 per month.
All right. So, I mean, that answers the question, or it gives you an idea that you can take a hybrid approach here. Because, you know, a lot of times the pushback that I hear from solo practitioners is, well, you know, I can't use somebody virtual, somebody offshore. I need a body in the office, and you know, that's my conundrum, and I need to have the money to be able to hire that person. So if I understand you correctly, you leaped off that cliff with your law firm. You hired somebody at 30 hours a week. That created enough revenue for you to rinse and repeat and do that again. You continue to add, you know, attorneys and staff members internally. Then later you started the Get Staffed Up company to kind of leverage that experience that you gained. And now you see a pathway where somebody could take a hybrid approach, hire if necessary, if that's what fits their practice model. They could get some advantages and some leverage by, as you said, having an in-house employee, have their own dedicated virtual assistant, whether it be a virtual paralegal or a virtual executive assistant or, you know, virtual legal secretary, or however that support role plays out in your firm, you could have that layered approach.
Right. And I didn't know a thing about having virtual, we all know that term, but in terms of an offshore team member or employee, that didn't enter my consciousness until the very end of 2017. And then we hired our offshore marketing assistant at the beginning of 2018. So I had already grown to about six or seven attorneys and you know, somewhere about 15, 16 employees before I knew about this. And my business partner, who originally learned about the idea and then hired four new employees that are all overseas that are still with him at the end of 2017. And he added, you know, four people for, you know, basically the price of one and a half, you know, salary wise that you'd pay someone here. And it was just incredible the amount of things he was getting done, and he was everywhere. And he had, you know, why, how could he be online so much and in person and get so much done? Because you're adding bandwidth. And if you're looking at it like a competitor standpoint, you've got a bigger, better team pumping out faster, better results at better margins. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. Let's talk about the details now here on how this would get implemented. Are there any particular practice areas that you feel lend themselves better to the use of something like a Get Staffed Up and Offshore resource? So I'm thinking, you know, is criminal defense better, personal injury, or does it matter?
Okay, so the type of law or the practice area does not matter one bit. The type of practice that somebody wants to have does. So I'll just go through some of the examples. We have one client that has seven of our offshore employees working for his firm, as well as about the same amount in-house. And I just wanted to circle back around because some people say, aren't you taking jobs away? And I'll say no, because our clients have been able to hire more people than they ever would have by here in the US by having people offshore to layer in and to protect costs. So from a macro perspective, I think we're helping the global economy. But I just wanted to make that side point. So
I think that's an important point, you know, because particularly in today's hyperbolic environment, I think you have to be, or you're well suited to be, if you're sensitive to that. And so giving you the opportunity and the margins to be able to grow your practice internally and domestically by using some offshore resources, I think is just good business sense.
Exactly. And that's what we discovered and why we wanted to help other people so that they could get over that. Well, I don't have enough money in the bank to hire someone. Well, how about somebody really good that just you work through a computer with? So our personal injury clients use their what we call staffers. And again, it's because there are employees and we take that employer liability off of you, our client, the business owner. So we call them staffers. So to do medical records, and that is a huge pain point for personal injury firms because of the constant delay and headache with gathering and collecting medical records.
I know that firsthand.
I looked at your website. I know that you live in that world, so that's difficult. And so the other, we've got a family law attorney that, and let me take a step back. And we have what we call clerical staffers, which do just paperwork, documents, you scan and send them files to sort and to maneuver. And we have a lot of real estate transactional attorneys that and personal injury attorneys that use our people that way. We have what we call dynamic staffers. These are people that are really good, obviously in English, and they're on the phone, so they can set court dates. They can call your appointments and make sure they're going to be there on time. They're also doing the administrative parts of whatever you need them to do, but they have the skills and the training to be on the phone so that you can use them in that way. And then the third category we have is a marketing staffer, which just is never going to create your own marketing message for you. That's a part of a business that's in your mind and your heart, and that you should always be in charge of. But all of the different things that you want to get done marketing wise, all the projects that entrepreneurs have, as I like to say, 100 new ideas before you shower in the morning, those all sit on a shelf because you don't have the resource to get them done. So with a marketing staffer, you can start to attack all those different projects and see what works and how to grow your business that way. We have criminal defense attorney clients that have our staffers answer the phone 24/7, because if you miss a call as a criminal defense attorney, that could be it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but when you can't answer your phone when you're in court, and we've had that kind of argument with criminal defense attorneys before as well, until they kind of say, all right, I admit it, it's more of a money thing and I just need to go for it. We have, again, you can do the paper processing, you can do files, you can do almost anything with a virtual or offshore assistant. You can even have a make a cup of coffee, as my business partner likes to say, with the right technology. They just can't physically bring you the cup of coffee. And when you start to frame all of the tasks that a firm needs to get done with that reference point, what could I reduce my burden? You know, I've grown my firm, I got 5 employees, but I'm constantly having cash crunches and worried about payroll. How could I increase efficiency and get more work done without, you know, breaking the bank every time? It's because most of us don't think how we could compartmentalize tasks and create a job description for something that could be done purely virtually.
Interesting. Now, where do you get your staffers from? How do you recruit them? How do you vet them? How do you insure them?
Our recruiting process is really in depth, and it has been developed by my experience over 8 years, and then honed and recalculated to recruit in both the Latin American countries as well as the Philippines, and now even some in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. So we're really starting to spread out globally, to answer the first part of your question. It is a proprietary process whereby for every 100 applicants we get, 3 or 4 make it to the interview stage. So we are really vetting out the hundreds of people that you have, sure, to go through yourself when you're doing the interview process. In fact, there's a statistic that every time you hire someone, it costs you $5,000. And people say, well, no, it doesn't. I spent about $50 on the ad, et cetera. In terms of the time and the resources that you don't calculate, that is the actual cost to your firm and to you. And I mean, imagine that. If you hire 3 or 4 people per year, that's a ton of money because of all of the sourcing you're doing that we do for you on the back end. So
yeah, let me just put that in concrete terms. If I were going to run an ad in Craigslist for an assistant that's going to work virtually, maybe domestically here, I'm going to have to sift through 200 or 300 resumes.
Yep.
And you know, unless you're skilled at that, that's a long process, and at some point it just becomes you get brain numb, and you're not looking at these with as critical an eye as you did when you started. And I can't tell you how many people have told me that it led them to say, "Oh well, screw it. This one sounds good enough. I'll hire this one." And it's not a good fit in many occasions, and it's just a self-defeating practice. So by using somebody like yourself, all that work has been done for you, and we've whittled it down to a couple of three candidates.
Right. And the second part of that problem that you just described, Neil, is a lot of people say, "I tried it, it didn't work. So that's stupid. Hiring is stupid.
Yeah.
I can't find the right people. It's too hard." It's like taking one shot at a basketball hoop. You miss, so you decide that it's impossible to make a shot. You just miss the shot, and it happens to all of us, and you can't beat yourself up over it. But if you're going to do it yourself, it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of trial and error, and hiring is tough. At my firm, I rarely look at resumes. You can't tell about a person in a resume. You can doctor up a resume to make it look really good. Sure. And then you get the person in, they're not the right cultural fit. They don't fit your core values. They don't fit your energy. And worst of all, I heard a quote or a story that said, if you're going to hire someone to play in your band, you don't sit down with them and ask them what concerts they've been to. You give them the damn guitar and you have them play the guitar. And when I heard it put that way, I said, that couldn't be more spot on. If you're going to hire a paralegal, bring them into your office, tell them to spend three, and this has nothing to do with my business, by the way. I just really enjoy team building and hiring. And so this is just an aside, but give them the dang test, give them the guitar, give them a pleading and say, show me what you would do with this as a paralegal. Because that's the only way you're going to know if that person has the type of experience that they say they have, because all you've done is looked at a resume and maybe had a phone call. And that's how you'll know who you're getting. And we do all that behind the scenes before you even spend a second on online interviewing someone. We interview them, we record the interview, we give them quizzes. And when we're finally at the point where we think this person is going to fit you and your team and has the requisite skill set, we send you a video of all their materials and documents, and you check out that person and you listen to their interview. And if you like them, then you get to interview them and you get to run with it from there. And then if you want that person, you say yes. And if not, we go right back to the drawing board. And we keep doing it until you find a really good fit for your firm. We're not perfect. We have had some people, these are human beings. This happens to all of us. They quit after a day. They decide it's not for them. We don't have 100% success rate, but we have a very high success rate. And our retention rate for our clients is over 85% because of the quality of the people that we're finding.
There was a book that was written, and I forget the name of it, but a quote that came out of it that's been promulgated and used forever, which I happen to disagree with, was, hire slow, fire fast. And I've always been of the opinion that's backwards. I'd rather hire quickly and fire quickly if need be. For just the same reason that you're suggesting, that you can go through endless rounds of interviews and questionnaires and practice tasks and all of that, and you can spend a lot of time doing that. But as you said, there's no better test than actually have them in the office, so to speak, and give them a task and see how it works. If it doesn't work, move on and try it again. You just, as you said, miss that one basketball shot. You haven't lost the game. And, I think using a resource such as Get Staffed Up helps a lot, because a lot of that weeding out process, 99% of it, has already taken place behind the scenes. So it makes it even easier to take that approach.
Yeah, that's interesting, Neil, because that quote does get used a lot. And the more I'm out there talking about team building and hiring and how to grow your business and your firm through building the right team, because in my opinion, that's what it comes down to. Sure. We, that quote gets thrown out. I don't use it that much. but because I think there's degrees of truth within that. I'm okay with hiring quickly as long as you're not holding on to people that are wrong, and wrong for them and wrong for you. So it goes back to firing quickly.
Yeah. But I also know, like I said, it should be hire quickly and fire quickly.
And right. Which is interesting the way you put that, because I haven't heard anyone change that around yet. But I do know a lot of people that one thing goes wrong and they say, "Oh, this person's terrible. How dare they?" They take it so personally that really what they're doing is they failed to train that person, work with that person, but they want to make themselves feel better by firing someone. So they just move on so quickly, and then they like to go to the bar and talk about how terrible people are. And so there's degrees within that, and it comes down to, I think, firing quickly is the most important thing, because if someone's really not the right fit, then you need to move on, and so do they, so they can find their right fit. But if you find someone good, then heck yeah, move quickly, hire quickly. We've done that. We found the right person and we said, "Wow, this person's talented. Let's move up the process." And we go and we aggressively go after people we think are going to be really good.
I know in the course of the four careers that I've spent in my lifetime, the people that worked out the best for me are the ones I knew almost immediately. The ones that worked out the worst were the ones that I had to convince myself that they were the right fit.
It is strange how often our guts are correct, isn't it?
Yeah. I want to circle back to a point that you made that I think really needs to be emphasized a little bit here. You know, I can't speak for the rest of the country, but here around the Washington, D.C. area, in the legal community, there is a premium on staffers who are fluent in another language. And it seems to me like this is a perfect opportunity to address that need using staffers from from Get Staffed Up as an example.
Well, thanks for making that point, Neil, because it's absolutely true. We've got a client that speaks Russian in the Northeast that has a lot of Russian speaking clientele. Because obviously, we're an immigrant country. We got a lot of pockets in big cities of people that don't quite have a grasp on the English language. And they said, "Can you guys find me someone that speaks Russian?" And we said, we can do our best. We haven't done it yet, but we'll tackle it. And if you think about finding someone overseas at a price point that's basically like taking on a project every month, I mean, it's really a extremely reasonable price point, but you're going to get that person for 40 hours a week, okay, full time, to make phone calls, to answer phone calls, to set up appointments, all in a native tongue, and you're just having these people with appointments set to come in and see you. It's really I hate to use the phrase, but it's a no-brainer from that standpoint, because if you are going to find that person onshore, it's going to take you a while, a good 4 or 5 months to go out and recruit that person that wants that job and that can be paid the appropriate price and stick with you. And the reason I mentioned that is you said hire fast. In your highest turnover positions, you do need to hire more quickly. When we're hiring a lawyer at a law firm, we do take that very slowly because we want to do our best. And it doesn't always work, right? But we like to say we solve the high turnover problems in your business. That's your administrative positions, your receptionist, your executive assistants, personal assistants, because if you try to pay that person 10, and in Georgia, I just saw the minimum wage is 515. I didn't know some states were still that low, but let's say you're another state where it's $9-$10, you can't live on $9 or $10. And so either you're going to find someone that's retired or a high school college kid, or you're going to have people start, wait 3 months, look for a better job, and rightfully so, because they need to make a living, and rinse and repeat. And yet, if you go with somebody offshore through us, then our average placing is well over a year.
It's interesting. Really very interesting. What if I want to take advantage of this, what technology do I need to have in place to maximize that efficiency?
just an internet connection and a VoIP phone system really works best if you want to speak to your, you know, your staffer over the phone. So a lot of our staffers in Mexico and South America have a VoIP system. So they're an extension away. So when somebody calls one of our Family Lock clients, the phone's answered in Mexico. They say, yeah, absolutely, hold on 1 second. And they click, you know, hold 101 transfer. And it happens just as fast as if that person were right down the hall in your office. And that's really the best system. And that's how simple it is nowadays with technology in 2020.
Now, if I want to use a staffer for something more involved, such as medical record acquisition or family law practice in discovery, would that experience be enhanced by, you know, being able to share access to the case management system or my document assembly system or whatever other technologies I'm using in-house?
Yeah. So if you're using Clio or Rocket Matter or Action Step, any one of these tools,
yep,
you add them as a user and they get access to everything just like you would to that person in-house. If you're, you know, organizing documents, then what we do is we make sure if you're requirements are that somebody needs to have a PDF reader and open up 1,000-page PDF files, that they have a computer system adequate enough to work with what you need. And that's part of the hiring and screening process, is we can't go hire someone and then tell you that this person's not equipped to do the job that we tried to hire them for. And that's what's nice about working with us, is because we have a great start planning call where we go through all of the job requirements, the job description, and we help you start on the right foot so that you're training from day one.
And let's finally wrap up with something that I think you actually started the conversation with, and I don't want to minimize it. And that is, seems to me that this greatly, and I mean greatly, reduces the headache of the administrative costs and overhead associated with hiring staff, particularly clerical or legal assistant staff. So I don't have to do withholdings for this staffer. I don't have to pay health insurance for this staffer. I don't have to account for time off, paid time off for this staffer. I'm just paying you, get staffed up, a fee, and you're taking care of all of that for me.
Exactly. You pay us a flat fee every month. We have to worry about each country's labor laws, such as there's a concept called the 13th month in a lot of countries where they're entitled and by law legally required to receive a bonus equal to 1 month's pay. We don't turn around and surprise you and send you that bill. We have to pay them. And there's a lot of really nuances in terms of the labor laws in different countries that we love to research and figure out. And at the end of the day, this is fun for us. We are finding some of the most humble, talented, nice, and appreciative employees that really want to find a good place to work. And if you can create a nice working environment and you treat these people like the human beings that they are and with respect and treat them the right way and not just think, oh, there'll be a computer, I don't know them, I'll just, you know, abuse them and send them a bunch of stuff and ask them why things aren't done more quickly. But if you genuinely want to be a good employer, it's a great fit. At Get Staffed Up, we already have 9 of our own offshore employees. It's 100% offshore company. That's the way that we've run that. Like I said, Neil, mm-hmm. I wish I had known about it sooner,
yeah.
But we're eating our own medicine. And I am just so thrilled when we meet, for example, a stay-at-home mom that kicks a ton of butt and really likes to work with us and our clients. It's really rewarding.
Well, it sounds fascinating. We obviously have had a number of guests on the program espousing the virtues of virtual assistants, and largely we viewed everything from a domestic standpoint. But I think you're 100% correct in terms of, you know, helping to create a global economy, a global experience. And look, if I can get on my soapbox for a little bit, at the end of the day, you know, we're all just one human race. And if you can create an environment that benefits folks, not just here but elsewhere as well. I think it's an easier thing to live with down the road. That's just my humble opinion.
Yeah, and thank you. And I'll just make one final point. The domestic or offshore project-based assistant, because a lot of people kind of get that confused. So they say, well, is this like Upwork? Upwork is where you list a project, like editing a video. And by the way, we have one of our staffers works with our client full-time. It just does about 4 or 5 videos per week. And he's picking up more social media traction than anyone we've seen just by pumping out the video content. But we still use Upwork for logo design or for PDF design or free report design. There's still project-based things you do. It's not one or the other. What we do, just to make sure we're clear in our distinction and where we fall, is that these are full-time team members of your firm, but they're virtual through a computer. And because they're offshore, the price point is something that you just can't beat.
Yeah. Well, it sounds great. Brett, tell our audience how they can reach out to you and follow up on anything you've had to say today.
The easiest way, Neil, is go to our website. It's getstaffedup.com. That's getstaffedup.com, getstaffedup. And our number's on the website, the email's on the website, and the contact form is how most people contact us. And we try to keep it simple that way. So
we'll have that in the show notes, along with you have a social media presence everywhere by the same name, Get Staffed Up, so they can check you out on LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and the like. So you shouldn't be hard to find. Brett, I want to thank you for taking the time again to be with us today, and look forward to staying in touch with you.
Neil, I want to thank you for creating a podcast that helps lawyers and entrepreneurs connect and see the cross-section of business and the law. I think it's very important what you're doing. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. Take care. Well, that will do it, fellow law entrepreneurs, for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors this week. That would be Ruby Receptionists, Jurisdiction, Law Coaching, and Spotlight Branding. Be sure to visit us on our website at www.thelawentrepreneur.com, or check us out on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. Just search for The Law Entrepreneur. You'll find us. Make sure you consider joining our private Facebook group, where we'll be having some new offerings starting the first of the year. So I want you to have a great week, and we'll see you next time. And thank you for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.